Okay, so well, I have no financial relationships. My presentation is going to shift gears a little bit. It's about a therapy group that myself and my colleague Sean Colazzi, we co-facilitate with transgender youth at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. So it is somewhat connected to the topic of violence, although that really is not the focus of my presentation, but I'll try to point out some areas where some of the other presentations you've just heard would kind of connect with the experiences of the youth that we work with. Okay, so hopefully what you'll get out of my talk today is you'll have an understanding for the mental health and psychosocial concerns of transgender youth, that you'll be able to identify some of the goals that we work on in the group, and three ways to support healthy development for transgender youth. A little bit about our transgender program at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. We've been providing comprehensive services for transgender youth since 1996. We work as a multidisciplinary team that includes physicians, psychologists, social worker, nurses, and case managers. The funding is focused on HIV prevention and risk reduction, but that is not our sole focus, as I'll talk about. We really want to promote healthy development, encourage and support positive life choices, provide support during transitioning process, and provide safe supervised hormone treatment. So the therapy group. We really created this about 2 years ago. Sean and I decided to start running this group because of the needs of our program clients. Previously, we were providing individual therapy, which we still do, but we realized that a lot of the youth would really benefit from helping each other, supporting each other, knowing that they're not alone. There's no other group like it available in the Los Angeles area, and I haven't really been able to find at least anything published about any kind of similar therapy groups, other locations either. One big issue for trans youth is a lack of exposure to positive role models, so seeing positive choices and outcomes in adulthood. And also, there was limited resources for our lower-risk clients, so a lot of the services are so focused on, as makes a lot of sense, on high-risk youth engaging in risky sexual behaviors, sex work, these kinds of things. But for our clients who were sort of low to moderate risk, we wanted to kind of keep them there and support them and not getting involved in some of the higher-risk behaviors, and just to provide a supportive and therapeutic environment for them. So a lot of the mental health concerns that we see are low self-esteem, depression, anxiety, self-harm, and suicidality. Now, this is just anecdotally, so in our group, a lot of the youth talk about at least having had or currently having suicidal ideation. And many of them have actually attempted suicide in the past. And substance abuse is an issue. Some sexual risk behaviors, poor body image, interpersonal difficulties, trauma, and identity issues. So it's not that, so there's some things here, of course, that do connect with violence. And many of the youth do report histories of some kind of trauma, whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, harassment, and victimization in the community and at school, that's extremely common. But also, there's the trauma of being rejected by your family, even if it's not your entire family. It might be one family member or a couple family members. Many of the youth are not living with their families, or if they are, it's definitely a big struggle to maintain relationships and be accepted by them. And identity issues, I want to clarify, it's not that their gender is not clear for them, but more figuring out what does it mean to them to be a girl or a guy, and who are they going to be? What is their own unique identity, and how they want to express themselves, including how they're going to express their gender. So as I've mentioned, some of the social concerns, psychosocial concerns, family issues, disclosure, dealing with how, when do you tell someone that you're trans, about your identity, societal discrimination, peer harassment, including violence. Many of the youth who participate in our services have not only experienced verbal harassment at school, but have actually been physically attacked and getting into fights. So some of them have tried to avoid it and are not sort of the fighting type, and they have been attacked. And others have expressed that they, to sort of get through high school, they had to be pretty aggressive and threaten others in order to, they felt, to protect themselves. Isolation, feeling that they're the only one, not knowing other trans youth or how people have handled this, and education and employment. So as you might imagine, if you're being harassed at school and not being feeling accepted, or even being your physical safety being threatened, school becomes a not very safe place, and it might be very hard to continue and to finish your high school education. Thankfully, many of our clients do finish, and several are in college. So that's some positive things to report. But they definitely do come up against employment issues. So that's part of the something that we talk about a lot, how to handle applying for a job, or if your boss is, you know, saying that they don't want to use your name, or a coworker is giving you trouble about your gender identity or your name, how to handle that, and providing resources for them is really important. So what we hope to do through this group is a lot of goals. improving interpersonal relationships, transitioning in a healthy and positive fashion. So that kind of goes back to what kind of girl or guy am I going to be? Really, what does it really mean to me, and who do I want to be? Increase self-esteem and self-acceptance, understanding disclosure issues, identifying and coping with internalized and societal transphobia, and exploring external presentation options. So many times the youth that are in our group, I would say particularly the male to female youth, struggle with the kind of female presentation. A lot of times, and again, this is just a clinical report of our experiences, that many times the male to female youth start off, and they have even described this themselves in sort of their process over a couple of years, that they sort of start off in a very showy, sexy kind of dress, showing a lot of skin, that has sort of, they thought that would help them feel good about themselves and get attention and whistles and things like that. But that as they explore and talk about their identity, that many of them have come to realize that's not really the woman they want to be. And seeing other options for dress and self-presentation has been very helpful to them. Let's see. So improving interpersonal relationships is a really important and big goal, because it really connects to a lot of other things. It connects to how they feel about themselves, the kind of dating relationships they're going to have. So we talk a lot about the difference between just a sexual relationship and actually having an emotional connection to somebody. And that connects a lot to self-esteem. So if sometimes the youth talk, often they talk about how if they're not feeling so good about themselves, or they're feeling kind of hopeless about ever having what they'll call like a real relationship, that puts them at risk for engaging in more sexually risky behavior, because they're sort of feeling like, well, this may be all I can get. At least I'll have something, and maybe I'll go along with what this person wants, just because I'm not thinking I can really get a better relationship than this. So that's obviously something that we definitely address. And disclosure issues are really important, because in different contexts with different people, there's so many different facets to it. So one is a safety issue around dating, and we talk about it a lot in the group because comparing the experiences of the female to male versus male to female youth. And they have many times acknowledged that it seems that for the male to female youth, there are more safety issues, that they're concerned about how a guy will react if he isn't aware of her transgender identity, and when do you reveal that? How do you do it safely? Some young people have talked about how they're kind of thrilled or excited by when the guy just thinks they're a girl, and so they don't want to tell him. But that at the same time, that puts them in a position of, you know, risk of their safety for whenever that does get revealed. Others have talked about, you know, that's not the kind of relationship I want, you know, so maybe telling someone on the phone, but just really considering all of these different contexts and situations that they may be in, and the pros and cons of, do you tell someone right up front? Do you become friends first and then tell them? Do you wait till you think something sexual is going to happen and then tell them? So there's really no right or wrong answer. We just try to help them consider the pros and cons of the different options. And then, like with family members and friends and school, there's a whole other set of considerations with disclosure. Some have not wanted to, you know, tell people at school, but then if they don't do that, then they're not going to be able to get support and sort of have the backing of, in Los Angeles County, LA Unified School District, we have a really wonderful program, Project 10, which exists to protect the rights of LGBT students. So, we educate them about that so that they know there's resources if they're experiencing difficulties at school. Okay. Some more goals are to help them understand hormone therapy and surgery options. We provide hormone therapy at our clinic, but not surgery, but we want to help them think about what's right for them. So the youth do talk a lot about what they're thinking they're going to want, and it really varies a lot. Some are saying, you know, I just, hormone treatment is really all I want. That's I'm cool with that for me. Others have many surgeries they'd like to get, but a big unifying theme on this is the financial burden. So some, you know, they talk about, well, I'd really like to, you know, have chest surgery or have full sort of SRS, but where am I going to get the money for that? So then that kind of often leads into discussions of injustice and societal inequities, which is a good thing for them to be able to talk about that. Again, we help them learn about their legal rights and resources, so we provide information for them. Decreasing risk behaviors is also very important. And increasing a positive future orientation to really encourage them to see themselves as positive, successful, healthy adults, as opposed to a lot of the images and information that they get, sometimes even from family members who may be trying to think, if I tell her all she's going to become is a prostitute on the street, then maybe she'll give up and become a boy again. And so they get, a lot of times the young people get very negative messages from, even from family members, but also from other people in the community, from teachers, things like that, that as a trans person, there are no options for you. So we really try to provide the opposite of that, you know, you can have your dreams and your goals and reach them and go to college and get training and do whatever it is that you're interested in. And then just adaptive coping, how to deal with challenges and barriers, acknowledging that these are very real, you know, that they really do experience barriers, discrimination, and sort of helping the youth ahead of time think about, well, how would I deal with that? Who can I go to for help? You know, talking about the difference between being assertive and aggressive, what the pros and cons are of, if you feel like you have to stand up for yourself, you know, the different strategies you could take. Do you beat someone up or do you ask for help and sort of go a more a route where you're trying to get support from, maybe from, you know, one of us? We could go to the school and have a meeting and things like that, to know that, so they know that they don't have to be alone in dealing with things. So just a little bit about who's participating right now. We usually do have about 6 to 10 participants, and right now we have 9. 6 are male to female, and 3 are female to male. They range in age from 16 to 24, and the group's pretty mixed ethnically right now. Latino and Latina, white, African-American. And in the past, we also have had several youth who are Asian. Typically, they're low to middle income families. Oops, how do I go back? Sorry. Okay, so based on on feedback from the group members, this wasn't done in any systematic research way, but just from what they talk about in group about what's helped them, they find that support, friendship, not feeling alone has been really helpful. I know several youth have talked about how that they almost just feel like the group and the services have really saved their lives, that they just didn't know what to do. And then finding out that there's this whole community and all these services available really changed their whole outlook on life. Thinking about flexibility and options, going beyond labels. So going beyond very stereotypical male and female conceptualizations to really be able to think about who am I as a unique individual. Dealing with issues of disclosures that's been very helpful for them. Increasing their own confidence, increasing coping skills and figuring out how to deal with discrimination and negativity that they encounter in their lives, and just generally having a lot more hope for their future. So in conclusion, the things that for providers, whether you're a therapist, a health educator, a teacher, a doctor, a nurse, the kinds of things that really can help to promote healthy development and functioning for transgender youth is just really being open and listening and valuing youth's experiences, and definitely confronting your own beliefs and feelings regarding trans persons and gender. I know that Sean and I talk about how talking with the youth and working with the youth, it's you're constantly learning new things and thinking about the issue of gender and many aspects around that. So it's very interesting, but you also have to be very open to looking at yourself, recognizing the importance of environment. A lot of times the youth, the problems that they have in their lives have been really blamed on them. You know, if you would just be normal, if you would just, you know, follow the rules, then you wouldn't get beat up, you wouldn't have all these problems. And teachers and administrators have literally said that to some of our kids who have been beaten up at school. You know, if you would just be normal, this wouldn't have happened. And so it's sometimes easy for them to get branded as bad kids, and it's really important to remember all the things they're dealing with and the effects of their environment. And just the huge need for education and advocacy. So going beyond the therapy session, going beyond the appointment, that may mean working really hard to involve families. It may mean going and meeting with teachers or school administrators to educate them and advocate for your client or patient's needs. Educating and talking with your fellow professionals to broaden their horizons around gender issues and gender identity. But that's really big, because finding trans-friendly service providers and agencies can be very difficult for young people, but it makes such a huge difference. I know one young person who used to participate in our group recently went on and was taking a class at a community college, and she was so nervous about it. But it turned out so good, because the professor, she had been harassed in high school and dropped out and all this, and the professor was just completely respectful, used her, you know, female name, female pronoun with no problem, and it just changed her whole outlook on what was possible for her. That she thought school was never going to be possible, and now, you know, she had this great experience. So how powerful that accepting and respectful response from someone can be. So that's everything on this for today. Thank you very much.
Do we have any questions this morning from the audience for any of the presenters? Yes.
It's very worthwhile for them to interact with each other. We talk about that. In fact, we bring it up periodically because we're always kind of getting. It's an ongoing group, so we're getting new people in and some people leaving, and there's just a lot of positive feedback. And they acknowledge that they may have different issues, but it's sort of like different facets of the same issue. So if you're talking about how society views you, you know, it's very helpful and interesting for them to talk about, well, you know, when I was, for someone who's female to male, to say, you know, I'm noticing now people are asking me to change light bulbs and no one's holding the door open for me anymore. And someone who, you know, one of the girls will talk about, well, you know, I'm happy that someone's opening the door for me. And then they might say, yeah, but all of this, we're just seeing how things are so separated by gender. It's like, you know, our own experiences sort of living in different genders has helped us to understand that. And so even though they're having different experiences, they can reflect on it and talk to each other about it. And they've said how helpful that is.
Okay, anyone else?
I can tell you what we did and how it was really a surprise to us. Initially, when we started the ACASI and we rolled through for general behavior questions, we really asked about their current partners and past partners. And we really asked them several times, so we cross-checked quite a bit, whether they've had male sex partners. And the men would say, that middle group would say clearly not, the 44, you know, that group, the 44%. But then further on, they were given opportunities to report specific activities in the past 60 days with men and with women. And we were very clear. I mean, we used street language to make sure they understood the question that was read to them. That is, how many times in the past 60 days did you put your penis or cock in another man's mouth to ejaculation? And how many times did you have another man put their penis or cock in your mouth to ejaculation? So we were very specific. And what we really found, using very blunt, very clear language that measured behaviors only and did not make reference to the gender or the sex of the sex partner, is that these men would then report 20, 30, 40, 50 times in the past 60 days. So there was a real disconnect between this notion of having a male partner, which we thought would connote intimacy, and these other types of sexual activities, which, you know, you might call the Bill Clinton effect. You know, it's really not sex. These are pleasurable activities you have with your buds. Crack open a beer, whatever, and do this. And so we're not quite sure what the construct is there, but we have identified it. I would like to do more work with that, actually, to actually figure out, well, if it's not sex and these are not male sex partners, what are these guys who they're obviously having behaviors with? So I hope that helps. But the way it worked and the way it really succeeded with us was that further on in the ACASI, after they had time to become comfortable with the environment of the ACASI, we then asked the frequency questions. Okay, and so that was the disconnect. By that point, they may have felt more secure to answer those. We don't know. Yes.
I'll get you first.
I'm wondering if you ask about perpetration of sexual violence in the population.
Sexual violence? Yeah, I've reported on that in the past.
Okay. I'm wondering if there were differences between the three groups in
perpetrators. From what I can remember, and I'm putting them together actually to write this up, both groups of MSM were more likely to be perpetrators of violence in their relationships, in their recent relationships. However, only the first group of MSM, those who immediately disclosed male sex partners, were more likely to be victims. So they were actually more victims in their relationships, and yet both groups of MSM were more likely to be perpetrators compared with the non-MSM in our sample. Now, very high rates of IPV in this population. It really surprised us that overall, I believe it was 23 or 24% reported perpetration or being a victim of IPV in the past year. Very high rates.
I'm wondering about that because some studies have shown that there's a higher rate of perpetration by non-gay identifying males on gay identified males. And I'm wondering if that might
be we did not measure the sex or the gender of the partners, so we don't know that. But we do know that with their intimate partners, they were more likely to be violent, that middle group, the closeted group. Again, I would really like to develop that more carefully and look at that issue. Again, and we've also done some ancillary studies looking at some of the psychosocial internalized determinants, that is, homophobia and also masculinity norms. And I can tell you that central group, they are off the chart with masculinity norms. They are much more rigid than even non-MSM. And they also have much more internalized homophobia. Actually, it's not internalized so much as it's sentiments around homophobia, because we asked the non-MSMs as well about their feelings towards homosexuals and homosexual behavior. They're off the chart. So they are a special group we're identifying there. And those are the correlates. We believe that probably there's a real incongruity between their identity and their behavior, and this is giving rise to a lot of internalized anger and rage, which is acted out. That's what we presume, although we haven't really measured that yet.
Okay. One more question. Did you have a question? All right. Thank you all for coming this morning. Thank you to our presenters. I hope you have a great day.